Well, the choice of ATEF was a little bit like the metaphorical pig in a bag. We weren't quite sure what it was, but we'd a good idea. We knew nothing of its history. We'd looked at several Northwich engines by virtue of the fact that they were around. And the history of most of those was known. This one, nothing was known. We were told it was XWD. It had come back late. It's got the wrong number on it. Originally, it had had the number off an austerity 280 on it. And then got 48773. There it is, take it away. Which we did. We knew it was bent. We didn't know why, we found out later. And we knew the axle boxes had been machined offset, and it would scrape the frames on one side, but not on the other. We knew the smoke box was thin, and was repaired by a piece of Wolverhampton gasometer, which just accidentally fell on the back of a trailer one day, and was said that it would be quite happy living in Shropshire, so off it went. As the paint came off, we found markings. We found WD markings from the scraping. We find numbers that don't make any sense. And then the history begins to unravel as to which one it is and where it's been and what it's done. And people we didn't know exist started providing information. We start meeting people who said, oh, and there was a Scotsman, I don't know if anybody remembers his name, who gave us the tale of the bent frames. He'd re-railed it in North Africa when he'd had a dispute with a camel. And his camel took the hump and wasn't having any of it. And the engine laid on its side in the desert, and that's how the frames were bent. The railway was slewed sideways across it while it lay there. No question of craning it upright because sand. They tied rails on sleepers, were tied to the wheels. A big hole was dug and it was dropped in the hole, upright, and dragged out. And we met the man that did it, and the driver, and the fireman. And this is impossible, except it happened. We then find photographs appearing. And there's one photograph of it being unloaded from the ship in, is it Alexandria?
Turn Egypt.
And there's our locomotive being craned off the ship. Obviously we'd arranged to have it done some years afterwards. And there's the photograph. And then somebody says, oh, I remember the day ever so well. We had to trip the electricity supply for the town because the crane was electric. And we kept meeting people. And we kept accumulating evidence and photographs. And not that long ago, somebody's wondering which ship it went on. We end up with a photograph of the ship. We assumed it had gone through the Mediterranean. We think it went round the via South Africa.
Good hope.
Yes, and we think it was offloaded Aden End somewhere. Mm. Went through that way. There is a photograph of what appears to be it. Don't know, wasn't there at the time. And the history then begins to unravel. And it is unravel because it's the way it happened. The military take an interest. It becomes a war memorial. It becomes a star in its own right. Mm. Not just as a railway engine. Mm. But a star by virtue of its Second World War credentials. Mm. And we're almost then overwhelmed with impossible evidence. Evidence you could never ever discover in a million years surrenders. And the whole history then begins to emerge.
I think it's important, this is emphasised by the readiness with which very senior army officers came to ceremonies.
Oh yeah.
Because subsequently was it 19? It was in this century that a big research took place as to which railwaymen had been in the Royal Engineers, and great trouble was taken. John Bond and John Pedder and others assembling the list of names and doing a very nice plaque chart of it, which is now hung next to it in the Highley Railway engine house. And even when we dedicated that, we got the top man from the Royal Engineers. So, I mean, they must take it seriously.
It's a very precious thing. It's not just another railway engine. It's very, very precious. And this precious nature we had no knowledge of. And the little things like, what are you going to do when the boiler ticket runs out? Well, when you're 19, 7 years is a long way away.
When you're 82, it isn't very far.
I'll offer an Isle of Man phrase. It's very simple. You're coming to my funeral, I'm not going to yours.
Right, yes.
And that's the equivalent of may you live forever.
That's right, good.
Lots of things. We've got a copy of what you might call the Haynes Manual of how to live with an 8F. And it includes the recipe for paint. Well, if you're in North Africa, where's your paint coming from in the 1940s? It was lubricated with vegetable oil. We've got the recipe for the vegetable oil. Well, racing motorbikes are lubricated with vegetable oil, so that's acceptable. And there was a very dear little old lady handed this over. She was clearing stuff that had been inherited years and years beforehand and found it. And there it is. And the WD number that's written on the front of it is our 8F.
Is it? Yeah.
Good. I photocopied it, and I shan't say that. I didn't photocopy it, because it might be Crown copyright. And I didn't let lots of people have copies, so if you don't want one, let me know, and I won't give you one. But the chances of ever finding that manual must be zero. That would have been the first thing on the fire, wouldn't it? We've got it. We've got photographs, we've got other people's memories, though sadly all too many of them have gone in the last 10 or 15 years. But we kept in touch with the driver and the fireman of the Camel incident for a long, long time. And they remember it vividly.
Well, you would, wouldn't you?
They blew the whistle, the Camel disappeared, they blew it again, and the Camel wondered what the noise was and wandered back again.
Yes. And we've met a number of rebel men, haven't we? The 90-odd-year-old who came to the engine 2 years ago and has sadly since died. Yes. But it's been a remarkable story, I think. Can we say, even those of us who were involved with it,
yeah.
I shouldn't say so, but it has been a remarkable story.
And every time the story goes quiet, something else emerges.
Yeah.
I think his only claim to fame is it wasn't at Bletchley Park.
Right. Are we sure?
No, we're not. It escaped the breakers. It could have gone for scrap in North Africa very easily. It didn't because, and again we've got the evidence, somebody one day went down a pile of them and said, that one, and it was as simple as that. It could have been lost at the Suez Crisis. It wasn't. WD had it back. Instead of refurbishing it, they could have sent it for scrap or used it for let's blow up railway exercises. Propelled it with a diesel shunter and showed people how to blow railway lines up. It could have sat on a plinth of concrete until somebody lost their temper and had it gone to scrap. It didn't. It got refurbished. It went back. We've got photographs of it. I think it was it Brighton or Eastleigh, somewhere on Southern did the overhaul. Whoever proofreads this will find out. And it had the wrong number on it. It had a number of a WD280, very briefly. We've got a photograph of very briefly. It sent to Scotland and sent back again for a warranty claim. Somebody knows exactly what happened, times, dates, places, the lot. It should have gone for scrap just before the Beeching report. It was lined up. It had the bag over the chimney ready to go. North British, who created it, saved it by producing these absolutely dreadful North British diesels that failed the week they were delivered. So it was hauled off the scrap pile and put back into service. I put back into service the week that the Beeching report was published. I've got a copy of the Railway magazine that shows it. It was withdrawn presumably when the North British stuff was re-engined and sorted out, and then reinstated.
And it lasted to the last day of steam?
It lasted to the last day. It was withdrawn and then rescued by Horwich, because all of a sudden the railways were short of heavy freight engines they could trust for long distances. Now, some of the Northwich trippers were in a deplorable state, but they never went very far. 40 miles was your lot, 30 miles was your lot. They were short of reliable steam that you could do 100 mile journeys with.
Right.
So it went into Horwich and got overhauled. It appears that when it came out, it was regarded as surplus, and it damn near went for scrap again. And then it came back into traffic, and it ran until the very last day.
Mourning its sisters, some of whom were under the Red Sea.
They were.
Because the boat sank.
The boat sank carrying them, yeah. It's... The camel has come back to haunt us even now. It must have really had the hump over this. Anyway, the engine went into the engine house pending overhaul on Seven Valley at Highley. The tracks in the engine house are curved in conflict with the bend in the frames.
So it straightened it?
Well, that was the fear, because everything's been machined offset.
Mm.
And when it went in, the paint was scrubbed off one side, mm-hmm. and you could put your fingers between the spokes of the wheel and the frame on the other. The bend's that good.
Mm.
Well, thankfully, it's been pulled out, turned and put back in again. It's now in sympathy with the bent frame.
Yeah.
Not long before it went in the engine house, we all assumed we knew what it was. John Bond and I had doubts. We weren't quite sure. We knew it was WD built, or built for the WD. We're not sure how much of it was built by North British. And we're not sure whether it was WD spec. We didn't know. But we went to do the big measure up at Bridge North, and I took calipers and micrometers and dial gauges and all manner of stuff, most of which we didn't need at the end of the day. And we surprised ourselves. It's got inch and an eighth thick frames, which are WD. But they are not mild steel. I put a spring-loaded centre punch on it and blunted the spring-loaded centre punch.
So what are they then?
I think it's a metal called Cromac, best described as spanner metal. The belief is that these things were built in such a tearing great hurry, North British would have been instructed to build them out of inch and an eighth mile steel. We haven't got any. That'll do. So maybe when the courtesy of the camel, that did us a favour. Because had they been mild steel, those frames would have been an almighty mess with the camel. And that could well have written the locomotive off where it was.
They were still usable.
They'd have stripped it for spares and left the hook where it was. We know it's got the simplified valve gear. We know it's what you can see. There's all manner of things we found in the measure that we couldn't see. And it's not a basic, bog standard, minimum material 8F by any means. And we found this out, what, 7-8 years ago?
Right. When it went in the engine house?
Just before it went in the engine house, yeah.
Well, I think that's a nice history, well, I hope it's a nice history that we've all compiled of the 8F history. I'm repeating the word history, the 8F story. And
it's a story of people as well.
It is a story of people.
Very much a story of people. And for me, I'm afraid, it's a story of fading memories. So if I've got anything seriously wrong, please don't shout at me.
Well, right. But if it lasts another 40-odd years, I think few of the original members will be there to celebrate.
You speak for yourself.
Thanks to Steve Leyland for recording this, and I hope whoever listens to it finds it instructive and enjoyable. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. And again, if I'm wrong, I've also 6 years passed a bus pass.
Right.
And this was 48 years ago, isn't it?
It is. Right.
That'll do.
Thank you.